You're listening to Managing Leadership Anxiety, Yours and Theirs, a podcast offered in partnership with Missio Alliance. Each episode, we discuss internal and relational pressures, how they block effective leadership, and how we can move through them to a greater health. And now your host, Steve Cuss.
Okay, this episode was not one I was planning. I was checking my Facebook this week, and Facebook reminded me that the Managing Leadership Anxiety podcast is 5 years old this week. And I thought, there's no way it's five. It kind of snuck up on me, to be honest. But I went back and checked, and yep, sure enough, we launched Managing Leadership Anxiety 5 years ago this week. And what's really amazing and cool is at the release of this episode, we will cross the 500,000th download of MLA. So we're 5 years old, 500,000 downloads. I thought, let's do an episode just to kind of celebrate, look back, look forward. So this episode has four parts. I'll talk us through the parts. But before I do, if you're interested in just kind of celebrating with me and getting a freebie out of it, at capablelife.com, we're offering a free download of the Four Spaces of Anxiety video. You know, out of everything I teach, the Four Spaces of Anxiety is one of the most popular because it's so simple and at the same time can be transformative as you learn to notice anxiety spreading in these four spaces. So I filmed a free video for you. Just go to capablelife.com. That's where you can download it and the PDF as well, just to celebrate with you. Also, this episode brought to us by our wonderful partner, Seminary Now. You can go to seminarynow.com/cuss and put in cuss30 for a discount for MLA listeners. You know Seminary Now. It's just a great resource to help you grow in your faith, grow in your theology. There's so many great videos there. So seminarynow.com. Thanks, Seminary Now, for helping us out here. Okay, so this episode will have four parts. We'll go through each of them pretty briefly, actually. And that'll be it. We're going to start with the birth of the podcast. Why did I launch it? What were my hopes and what ended up happening? Then I'm going to just spend a little bit of time on systems theory and why I spend so much time studying it and teaching it. And then also, I'm just going to be quite candid on what's my unique contribution to the field of systems theory. Then the third section will be talking about what I've learned about doing public work. You know, when we launched the podcast, I never thought I would be doing this full time. But here I am, and I'm now 2 years, not quite 2 years into doing this work full time as I travel and speak and write. So I've had a number of people, a number of my listeners also interested in doing public work, you know, writing a book or launching a podcast or doing some coaching. So I just thought, oh, I'll share the little that I've learned so far. And then part four of the podcast is some announcements, some exciting announcements for next year. Okay, so solo episode. So I am going to light the Connected, Aware, Present 3-wick Capable Life candle. This is a candle that we give when people come to our intensives in our home or when we do destination intensives. So I just light one wick, remembering that God the Father, the creator of heaven and earth, is with us, and that God is so powerful, he doesn't have to fight and cajole and scare people the way the false gods in the early ancient Near East had to do. No, the author of Genesis reminds us that all our God has to do is speak, and when God the Father speaks, life happens. The second wick is a reminder of Jesus the Son. My goodness, did Jesus speak and life happened in John chapter 1. So not just Genesis chapter 1 in the beginning, but John chapter 1 in the beginning. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Jesus, we thank you that you know what it's like to be human, that you walked among us and actually gave us the most tangible representation of who God is, because we all have our own ideas, but you showed us and you lived it and loved us. Amazing. The third wick, a reminder of an area of God's personality that I most need reminding of, the presence of God's Ruach, Holy Spirit, God's breath, God's animating presence. That when Jesus ascended into heaven, we were not left alone, but God came back down. He inhabits the praises of his people where two or three are gathered. there is God in the midst of us. And there are more than two or three of us gathered on this podcast, and that just reminds us that God is with us. And when we remember that God is with us, we can relax into the presence and the love and the sovereignty of God. And we can begin to right size all the pressures that we're finding. We can remember that we are human, which means that we have the rights to our emotions, which means that it's okay to be hurt. You know, that was one of the big lessons I had to learn as a leader, is I wanted to graduate from being hurt. And I don't just mean by critics, I mean like by life. Sometimes when I do my workshops, particularly if I'm doing it for pastors or people in caregiving vocations, you know, medical professionals, counselors, things like that, I'll ask them just to think about how many people this year they know who have cancer. And it's a phenomenal list. It's a long list. Like, that's just the nature of pastoral work, the nature of caregiving work. You think of all of the life that comes your way. And, you know, we believe that we shouldn't feel it, but of course we do. So we light this candle, thanking Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, because God, you are so good. Okay, part one, the birth of the podcast. All right, the podcast was launched mid-November 2018. I was a full-time lead pastor. I'd been a lead pastor for 13 and a half years. And I knew that I had my first ever book coming out in May of 2019, or I think actually April of 2019. And it was very clear I was a rookie author with absolutely no following. No one really knew me. What was wild about managing leadership anxiety is there were really only like 50 people in the world that knew that I taught systems theory with a faith integration. And almost all of those people were in my local church, my staff, our interns, some core leaders. And yet my friends Jeff and Sherry Surratt, I owe them a lot. They pulled me aside, I don't remember, I think it must have been late 2017, early 2018. And they said, you really need to write a book. Like this stuff you teach, people need to hear it. And at that time, I was teaching it in a cohort in our church. People would sign up for a year, sometimes 2 years. And we would do these long, slow cohorts. We still do them, by the way, at our church. If you can get to Discovery Church on the second and fourth Tuesday of the month, you can come and do one of these cohorts with us. Anyway, Jeff and Sherry Surratt, they said, look, you need to write it in a book. And I said to them, well, it's not a book. It's an experience. And Jeff, I owe him a lot for this. Jeff very kindly looked at me. And by the way, Jeff and Sherry are two people I often lean on when I need wisdom. They've been incredibly, incredible friends to me. So Jeff just looked at me gently and he says, well, if you write it as a book, that gives you the power to make it anything you want it to be. Like, don't get so hung up on the fact that it's a book. The reason I was hung up on the book is I don't believe people can read their way to change. And I was concerned that if I wrote this rather than had it as an experience, that it would, cheapen it or something. But that made sense. And Sherry had a connection at Leadership Network, Greg Ligon, and Greg connected me to Thomas Nelson, HarperCollins, and I did a pitch for them. And boy, it was just a little window that HarperCollins had, or Thomas Nelson had, where they were less concerned about the size of your audience and more concerned about the quality of your content, the quality of your idea. That's what publishing used to be. It used to be all about that the idea drove the book, and then now it's really more about the size of your audience driving the book. I don't say that cynically. It's just, it's kind of shifted that way. And Nelson was intrigued by this guy that no one had ever heard of that had this kind of integrated leadership theory. And so, you know, as in the deep in the heart of the publishing experience, and it became clear to me that if I wanted the message of this book to get out, I'd need to do my own marketing. And so I thought, well, I love interviewing people. I wonder if I should launch a podcast. And I would be doing two things with a podcast. I would be getting to meet some of my heroes. Like, it was a good excuse to reach out to some heroes and see if they would come on the show and talk to me. I love learning. I love listening to wise people. I've always loved reading. So I thought, how amazing that I would get to not just read an author, but talk to an author. So that was a lot of the impetus. But then the second impetus, quite frankly, was, man, I probably should build an audience for my book so that when it comes out, it's not just 50 people. You know, the average book, I'm told, sells 1,500 to 2,500 copies. And that's what we expected out of MLA. We thought it would just sell the average amount. And that was, if I did a podcast, it would sell the average amount. If I didn't do a podcast, it wouldn't sell many. So I started researching podcasters, and I was an avid podcast listener in 2018. I've been listening to podcasts, I mean, probably 13 years, 12 years maybe. I was an early adopter in those early, those old iPod mini days and the tape adapter for your car. Man, I did so much podcasting in those early days, in the early 2000s. So I loved podcast. I loved the medium of it. But I started to listen with more intent of, well, what kind of show would I want to do? And I, at the birth of the podcast, I was really struck by the way Ian Cron did Typology, because somehow he would get these fascinating people on his show to talk about his field. I thought that was brilliant. Ian Cron is obviously a maestro of Enneagram, and even to this day, his podcast is amazing as he talks about Enneagram. And I loved his podcast, and I love Ian. I love what he does. But I thought, oh, I could model my podcast after that. You know, get interesting people on my show, but at some point have them talk about my tools or system theory. And I thought that's how I'll build an audience. And I'll just say right now, what surprised me most was two things. The first was how many people said yes. I think of those early guests like Kay Warren, Nancy Ortberg, Makoto Fujimura, Marshall Shelley. These are people that I had always admired and didn't know, and they didn't know me. And my audience when I launched was about 300 downloads a week. You know, we're way bigger than that now, but we didn't have an audience, and these people didn't care. They were very kind to come on. And then I had some friends also, Glenn Packiam, Jeff Surratt, Sherry Surratt. And so I did these early interviews, and all of them, the people that didn't know me and the people that did, I came away from each interview so energized, so thrilled. I was like, this is going to work. This is going to work. But what surprised me is a high percentage of those early guests, people like Nancy Ortberg, who has been a profound impact on my life, and her husband John, of course, as well, a profound impact on my life before I knew them. And now that I have the privilege of knowing them, man, amazing people. But Nancy went from guest to evangelist and really started promoting my work. Chuck DeGroat went from guest to evangelist to friend. And this has been the amazing surprise of the show, is how many of my guests have either helped forward my work or become friends. Just incredible. So my goal was, okay, I know I want to model it after Typology. I want to get interesting people on, people I'm interested in, talk about their thing, and then I want them to talk about my thing, but I want to do it in a way that they feel safe. In case you're wondering, I have recorded podcast interviews where afterwards the guest has said, I'm so sorry, either we have to edit that out or actually we can't publish at all. And that's fine with me. I understand. I never want, this is not a show that's interested in digging up dirt or putting a guest in an uncomfortable position. All I'm trying to do is see if the guest will let me get in their mind and get under the surface for the sake of my listeners. If I can show the humanity of my guest, the struggles and vulnerability of my guest in a way that the guest feels safe, then my listeners get the benefit. That's always been the goal. You know, in many podcasts, now that MLA is bigger, we are on the radar of publicists, and I probably get 5 emails a week from publicists looking to get authors on my show. And look, these are good people. I have no issue with that. But I'm not interested in, like, you know, the bullet point conversation. I want to go under the surface. What makes you afraid? When did you make a mistake and what was it like? Because that's human. That's what we can all relate to. So those early interviews, not just with my friends like Jeff and Sherry and Glenn, but people I'd never met, they were game to go there. And it was the nature of going there that really got the attention of some of them to say, man, this is different. I've had a number of guests and it really meant a lot to me a number of guests after we stop recording, they'd say, I've never had a conversation quite like this. And I just take that as a great, like, not, I don't know about a compliment, but it says, okay, I'm hitting the target. This is what I want to do. All right. So that's kind of the birth of the podcast. The final piece about the birth that really has been a delight for me is the gauntlet. I used to love the TV show Inside the Actors Studio with James Lipton. For my global audience, you may not be aware of this show, but there's this guy, James Lipton, and he runs an acting studio. I think it's in New York City. I'm actually not sure. And he brings on famous actors, you know, Robert Redford and Susan Sarandon, Meryl Streep, like really big names. And he talks about their career, and he's a total fanboy. It's part of what makes the show great. He loves his guests, but at the end of every episode, he asks them the same questions. It's like this kind of rapid-fire round of questions, and that's where I got the gauntlet idea from. I thought, oh, it would be fun if every guest, no matter what they're on to talk about, I put them through what I playfully call the gauntlet of anxiety. And, you know, for the first two seasons, it was always the same questions. And then for the sake of my audience, I started adding questions and mixing it up. Now we have 21 possible gauntlet questions. I've got a little file of them. And what we also call the world's worst party icebreakers. Like, these questions go pretty deep. But I've been so impressed with my guests and how game they have been to answer them and how much it helps my listeners. I love that. And now what I do is I just have the 21 questions and I kind of let the interview dictate which ones I'll ask. So thanks to James Lipton for that inspiration. And also somewhere along the way, I was watching comedians in cars getting coffee. And I've mentioned this before, so I'll just be quick, but when Jerry Seinfeld talked to Dana Carvey, and during the course of that interview, Dana turns around and says to Jerry, "When in your life have you felt most fully loved?" I just remember being so undone by that question. And so that question is in every gauntlet. Okay, that's part one. That's the birth. Part two, systems theory. This is going to be brief, this section, because, you know, if you're a listener to this show, this is fairly much recap. But okay, in a nutshell, what is systems theory in a nutshell? It is two things. It helps you notice anxiety. Whether you think you're anxious or not, systems theory's definition of anxiety is essentially reactivity. So it helps you notice reactivity in you and between your people. That's its superpower. You can walk into any situation and you can learn to notice the reactivity. And then once you've noticed it, you can actually commit to no longer spreading it and catching it. And that makes you a really powerful person, a powerful leader. But the other thing I love about systems theory, it's one of those theories that very, very few people know about. Most rooms I'm in, no one's ever heard of it. But once they've been exposed to it for 10 minutes, they feel like it explains their whole life. I get this incredible, it feels like a high. I mean, I've never done drugs. I don't know what it's like to be high, but I get this like euphoric feeling because I get to go into rooms when I'm working with teams, organizations, or conferences, and I get to introduce them to themselves in a way that they've always known about but never named. Most of the feedback I get is, man, you just name something I've always felt but not knowing what to do, and then you've given me something to do. I love that about systems theory. So, you know, nowadays, tons of people know Enneagram, but still systems theory, it feels to me like a sleeping giant. And I don't know why that is. The theory's been around since the 1950s. Okay, what's interesting is when I first started getting on planes and teaching people, I was pretty nervous that I was an imposter because systems theory typically comes from the world of marriage and family therapy or doctorate of psychology. And here am I with my cheerful Masters of Divinity, my practical ministries master's degree. I mean, I don't have a doctorate. I don't have clinical training except for my chaplaincy. So I would get up and once in a while, I would have a therapist in the room and I'd be like, oh no, oh no. And then it's been so delightful, really without exception, now that I've done a couple of hundred workshops and conferences and so on, what ends up happening is the therapist is so excited that there's a pastor talking about it. They're so thrilled that someone from a church point of view who typically is in the Bible is educating people on the nature of anxiety. So that's been delightful. Okay, Systems Theory, this is part two of the podcast. I wanted to share my unique contribution to systems theory because when I first started teaching it publicly, I didn't realize I was contributing something new. I thought I was simply sharing an existing theory. But now that I'm a couple of years in, I've really come to peace with the fact that I'm actually bringing something new. And that doesn't make me better than other people. It'll actually get to when we do our third section of the nature of public work. But it does help me to realize this is what I do. Now, many of you know one of the great joys of the podcast, and now that I'm doing public work, is the people I get to meet and get to know. And I now know almost all of the main people who are doing systems theory work, and I send people to them all the time. Like, how many times have I been listening to someone and I've said, you need Trisha Taylor and Jim Harrington from The Leader's Journey. Like, those people are about as good as it gets. They have a unique contribution and a unique way of doing it. Someone like Pete Scazzaro, in many ways, the godfather of systems theory in the church. Pete Scazzaro's unique contribution with his emotionally healthy focus is amazing. I could go on and on, but my unique contribution, number one, I've noticed, and this has surprised me, and I hope this comes across in the spirit in which I mean it. I've been surprised that I have studied systems more broadly than most people who teach systems. I think because Murray Bowen and Ed Friedman are so iconic, most people never leave their sphere and discover the broader teachings of systems theory. So when I'm running into another systems theorist, I'll talk to them about the other streams and they've not heard of them. Now, I can't take much credit for this. I have to credit my counseling professor in seminary, Jack Holland. When I came from chaplaincy, where I'd learned about Bowen theory, and I was all jazzed about it, and I went from chaplaincy to graduate school, I kind of did it backwards. Jack Holland was a brand new professor, and I come bouncing into his class. I'm like, hey, I'm fanatical about systems theory. And Dr. Holland had been trained in the depths of systems theory, and I start talking Bowen, and he starts talking Bateson. And I'm like, who? And then for the next 3 or 4 years of graduate school, some of you are like, 3 or 4 years, what are you like, slow? Nope, the Master of Divinity is a monster of a degree. It's like 90 credit hours or 96 credit hours back when I did it. Now, you youngsters do it in like 72 hours. But back when I was a kid, man, it was a big degree. So 3 to 4 year degree. And Jack Holland said, let me introduce you to a whole other world. So Bowen and Friedman, they're essentially East Coast USA, Washington, D.C., Maryland area. But Bateson and Watzlawick and Karen Fish and others, Richard Fish, I mean, these are the West Coast people. The Palo Alto group is what they're known as. And they're the ones that really introduced second order change. They're the ones that taught me about noticing try harder and more of the same. Incredible. And then after that, after I was done with grad school and I kept chasing systems, I discovered the Michigan group, Steve DeShazza, Insu Kimberg, and the work they did on the miracle question. Just the incredible work, which we'll cover in a future podcast. I've not done much on the miracle question on this show. Okay, so that's one of my unique contributions is I've studied more broadly. Another unique contribution is I've worked hard to integrate systems with our faith experience. Now, of course, I'm not the only one that's done that. Jim and Trisha do that. Pete Scazzaro, Jack Shatama does that. He's got some wonderful work there. And of course, those of you who have read Ronald Richardson and Pete Steinke and these legends in the field. But there aren't many of us. Oh, sorry, guys. Got to mention Todd Bolsinger as well. What I love about Todd's work, by the way, is it's very systems, but systems is informing his work and his output, his work on it, his writing on it. When you read it, you're like, okay, this is a guy that's done systems, but I love the way he keeps it informing. I kind of talk about Todd like, well, systems is the tea bag that's steeping the water that we're drinking from Todd. Todd, I don't know if that metaphor kind of made you gross out or not, but there it is. Okay, so that is a unique contribution. There's not many of us that integrate systems with faith, but what it really woke me up to realize, okay, systems and reactivity Reactivity and chronic anxiety is based on a false belief. My faith is based on truth. Truth sets me free. So if I can help people locate their false beliefs, maybe they can experience more profound freedom in Christ. And then the gift of systems to help you notice when you're stuck and when you're applying more of the same and try harder. Just me realizing, okay, systems can actually be an approach of discipleship. If I want to grow in my faith, if I want to help my congregation grow in faith, I can use what I've learned in systems and integrate it into the way we approach Scripture, the way we approach God in prayer, the way we believe God approaches us. And that really is the heart of my book coming out next May. The Expectation Gap book is fundamentally a discipleship book, a spiritual growth book, getting unstuck using some of these tools. Okay, then my third contribution is I've done the difficult work of creating tactical tools. When people are anxious and stuck, they don't want to be given something to think about. They want something to do. And just a little secret for you, when you prescribe an action for an anxious person, it flips the power dynamic. Usually they'll come to you anxious and overwhelmed. It's almost like they feel like they are under the anxiety. Anxiety is on top of them and has a grip on them. But when you give them something to do, it flips the power dynamic, and now they are on top of the anxiety. Doing something is empowering. And so I've worked really hard. When I do my workshops, people come away, you know, if they do like a day workshop with me, they're going to come away with 12 tactical things they can do to manage anxiety in them and other people. And I think that's why my work has gotten traction as well. Okay, part three of the podcast, what's it like doing public work and what have I learned? I was wondering whether to put this in the podcast, but so many of my listeners are actually interested in doing public work. I think a lot of people are interested in coaching or podcasting or writing a book one day. So I've just got four quick things that I've learned. Okay, number one, I've probably done, you know, I've not kept count, but I was traveling part-time in 2021, and then I started full-time 2022. It's now wrapping up 2023. Between my travels and Zooms, I've probably done 200 to 300 speaking engagements with different organizations. That number may be off, but that's probably about right. Overwhelmingly, I'm blown away by the quality of the people I meet in local church leadership and in Christian nonprofits. That's where most of my work is. I do most of my work with local churches and Christian nonprofits. I do, I'd say maybe 10 to 15% of my work in the marketplace, where it's almost always a Christian that's bringing me into a marketplace endeavor. And by the way, I've had some really interesting marketplace work. Architectural firm, neurology department of a hospital, a television show with some celebrities, and Clorox, you know, the cleaning supply companies. Incredible. So I've done marketplace work, but overwhelmingly my work is local church, Christian nonprofits. The reason I say that I'm blown away is if you go on social media, there's so much cynicism and distrust today around Christian leaders. Like if you're a local church lead pastor nowadays, I have so much empathy for you because of the amount of mistrust that you have to manage in people because of the abuse of some public leaders that have been exposed. Now, I just want to be clear. I think everyone knows where I am on this. I think all abuse and cover-up should be exposed. I believe truth sets us free. So I believe leaders who are abusing or who have secret lives with these secret habits that are destructive to them and their people, I believe they should be exposed, not because we like catching them, but it's not good for their soul to stay hidden. It's not good for the abuser's soul to keep getting away with it. And of course, the colossal damage it does. Like spiritual abuse is colossally damaging to people. It gets between them and God. I think this is why Jesus was so harsh on the Pharisees, because the Pharisees in the Bible were putting an unnecessary obstacle between people and God. And that's the way I see abuse and these public figures with these private lives that are just terrible. But listen, it's not just that. It's that when they are finally exposed, they double down or they go into hiding. They never go on the road of healing themselves, which is repentance, confession, and then a path of restoration. Many of them do the shortcut work of just finding another church. And like when I say the path of restoration, some of these people should never be doing public ministry again. The best news for them is to do something quiet, serve the Lord in a quiet behind the scenes way, because sometimes the worst thing for your soul is the spotlight. So not just those leaders, but also the boards that cover it up and minimize and blame the victims. I think all of that should be exposed. But what is also true is there is an overwhelming majority of leaders that I just think they just want to be well and they genuinely want to help people. They are people with good heart and good intent and high skill, and they are doing their part to further the kingdom of God. So I have been in a couple of rooms, in a few rooms where there's a toxic leader. I've been in some of those places, but the overwhelming experience of my life has been I get on a plane, I get to the airport, I get to my destination, and wherever I'm going, whether it's like New York City or Fargo, North Dakota, what I find when I get there is amazing people, amazing leaders who want to be well, who are doing good work, who are really finding the needs in their community and globally and making a profound difference. I've been so encouraged as I've done public work. I've been so encouraged by the people that I get to meet. The second thing I've had to learn is it was terrifying, frankly, to go from a steady paycheck at church with health benefits, which for those who are not my global audience, in the United States, getting health benefits from your employer is a financial huge deal. Just to be frank, like my family of five, it costs us out of pocket about $18,000 a year just for the premium, just for the health insurance. That's not what our health costs, it's what our premium costs, and then it doesn't cover much. So when I stepped from being a full-time lead pastor into now running my own business and running my own ministry, I have two entities. I have a for-profit business and a non-profit ministry. It was terrifying. It was really scary. It was a faith move. And now that I'm 2 years in, it's just been a fascinating loaves and fishes experience. The faithfulness of God, the way that God has opened doors up for me and my work, like immeasurably more than I could ask or imagine. It's just been mind-blowing. You know, many of you know we have our online community, Capable Life. It's the best thing I do. Out of everything I do, my online community is the best thing because it's the best chance people have at really growing and having breakthroughs. Capable Life, I have to go back and check. As of now, I think we're in 17 different countries. We have missionaries in secret locations that get to go on there and do the work. So just seeing how God has spread this work has been incredible. Okay, another thing. This is, I guess, a piece of advice for those of you wanting to do public work. Here's what I would say. If you want to do some kind of public work, a podcast, a book, coaching, consultation, what you have to wrestle to the ground is what is your unique contribution or skill? There are more and more people going into coaching nowadays, but many of them, all that they are bringing is their experience. Now, don't misunderstand me. Like if you have 25 years of experience, that's what I have really, that's a lot. That's something. I don't mean to demean your experience, but what professional coaches and consultants bring is experience that has been harnessed into something else. So for me, my unique contribution is two things. I bring systems theory, which very few people bring. So I bring something in a way of looking at life that is unique, but also I have done the hard work of building a path for people to walk. So I don't just like bring my experience. I bring a specific expertise, but also a path or a playbook or a way of doing things. And as I've met a lot of consultants and coaches now that I do this work, that's what sets them apart, is they're putting you through a process. They're not just showing up and saying, well, let me just use my experience. Okay. So I guess related to that, if you want to launch a podcast, if you want to write a book, and if you want to coach, you should totally do it. It's amazing. It's amazing. I would just say you should do it for its own end. Like, write a book for the joy of writing the book, do a podcast for the joy of doing the podcast, and let God manage the results. And then if you are wanting more intentional about your work having a public impact, then you need the right tools for the job. And that means you need to set aside money to get coached, because the online world is absolutely saturated. There are so many people trying to get your attention. And so learning some of the back-end tools of how to help people find you, and how to offer your materials in a way that genuinely help people. I think we've all run into those online places that are so aggressive about getting your attention. I don't know, but find the right tools for the job. So if you want to write a book, I've used the app Scrivener. I would not recommend doing a word processor. I would use a book writing app. The one I love is Scrivener. If you want to launch a podcast, there are so many out there that can help you get the right gear. There's really no excuse nowadays for having bad gear, and the right formats to do it. I would say that. So yeah, doing public work, it's been incredible. And let's see, I think that's all I've got on public work. And then finally, the final part of the podcast, number four, is announcements. First of all, yes, we are moving into the world of getting sponsorship. And that's because the podcast costs quite a bit of money. And so I am going to avail myself of sponsorship. We now have enough downloads that we attract sponsors. So that does afford me. We have one sponsor right now, so we talk about them all the time. SeminaryNow.com/cuss. If you want to grow in your relationship with Christ, go check them out. We've got videos on there as well. Cuss30 is the discount. Also, the other announcement is, yeah, if you'd like a free resource from me, go to capablelife.com and you can download the Four Spaces video and the PDF. I think it's a 10-minute video, 8-minute video, and it teaches you what the four spaces are, how to notice them, and then how to start detangling anxiety when it's coming your way. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. The final announcement is next year, next season, January, we will be going on the Christianity Today network of podcasts. Had the privilege of meeting and getting to know Mike Cosper last year through his pastor, Kevin Jameson, at the Sojourn community in Louisville, Kentucky. Mike's a really great guy, and he runs all the podcasting for Christianity Today. We started chatting and just realized there's a lot of synergy between what I'm doing and what they're doing and wanting to do. So next year, we will be a Christianity Today podcast, and we will be changing the name of the show. Really, very little else will change about the show, but we will change the name and the graphic for the show because I have more books coming out. I've got The Expectation Gap coming out in May. And then my wife and I are writing a book for the marketplace. It won't be a faith-based book. It'll be a book that you can use if you're a school teacher, if you're in the medical field, if you're a youth coach, if you're a parent, or if you're in business. We'll be writing a book on anxiety next year, and then I'll probably be publishing another one with Zondervan the year after that, which at this point we're looking at an integration of systems and theology. We're going to open our Bibles and just look at some stories in Scripture and show what's going on in systems there. I think that's going to be really fun. So anyway, I've got more books coming out, and of course my company and ministry, Capable Life. So it's time next year to connect this show to my broader work, not just to my first book, Managing Leadership Anxiety. We will still get guests on the show. In fact, going on Christianity Today will afford us a bigger reach where we can get some guests, I think, with their help that I've not been able to get. Lisa, my wife, will still be on the show. Jimmy, my compadre, will still be on the show. But we'll change the name. And then we will keep a focus on helping leaders be healthy, because in our experience, when the person at the top of the org chart is the healthiest, that helps others be healthy. When the person at the top of the org chart is not healthy, it's so hard for the rest of you. You know, so much of my work is often with people who are, I call them middle managers. I don't mean that derogatory, but they report to someone and they have people report to them. And they're like, well, what do I do when my boss is the most anxious? And I get it. So our work will still really be trying to reach those key leaders. But with really the work we do and with my next book, we're really going after any human being who wants to be well, any human being that wants to experience the God they believe in, that wants to improve their relationships, primarily their relationship with themselves. So we'll be changing the name. We're kicking around a few names. I'm not going to announce them on the air because we're not sure which name we're going to go with. But 2024, mid-January, we'll launch with CT. Really grateful for that partnership. And this is not a season finale. We've got, I think it's 4 guests coming up in the next 4 weeks, and then we'll wrap up in mid-December. Okay, folks, that's 5 years. Those of you who have been with us since that very first year and those very early interviews with my cheap gear and when I was learning how to interview, I just want to thank you for sticking with us. It has meant so much to me that you have stuck with us through this show. And for my new listeners who have discovered us on the journey, maybe you first heard me on Kerry Newhoff, or maybe you first heard me on Ruth Haley Barton, or maybe you read the book along the way, and or I came to your place and I did a workshop. It means so much that you join us in this journey. And so we do love hearing from our listeners. You can just email me directly, steve@stevecusswords.com. Love hearing both how we have impacted you. That's always really kind. Also, it makes a big deal if you would be willing to leave a review. I very rarely ask for it because I don't like it when podcast asks audience to do things. So I don't ask for much, but that would mean a lot if you would go into iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast and leave a review for me. That really helps actually their analytics and the way they spread the podcast around. But also the other way we love to hear from you is, what would you like to hear more about? It helps us to know to plan future episodes. Tell us what's on your heart and mind. Okay, folks, thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you next week when we have a guest.
For more resources, visit stevecusswords.com or missyoualliance.org.